Just for One Night Blonde, featuring Astrid S, and bringing us out of the overnight sequence here on Lincoln's First Community Radio Station, that would be Siren FM.
The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
And as we progress ever onwards, we can delightfully say that we'll be featuring on the programme today the return of Tessa Snod. We'll be contacting Richard Fitzwilliams to talk about Atomic Blonde, Final Portrait, and indeed his thoughts on the Edinburgh Festival. We've also got a special on Music Port. Strangely enough, coming up in a matter of moments from this. Gurus over the years have actually said that the reason the universe actually brings us trials is not because it's trying to test us, it's because it's actually wanting us to learn and to grow, and at some deep level we've actually set up these trials ourselves. Isn't that right, Phil Leonis in Los Angeles?
I suppose you're simply describing your efforts to use Skype. Is that what you're doing?
Well, yes, excellent. Now, oh my word, now you're connected, we're not sort of there. Are you still there, Phil, at all?
Oh, are you telling me you couldn't hear Fuzz Aldrin meowing just now?
Oh, Lord. Clearly, that was Fuzz meowing. That was amazing. Good evening, Phil, in Los Angeles, and good morning to the United Kingdom, where actually it's a very special day today, Phil, because it's what's referred to as A-Level Results Day. So for our students who are wishing to actually move from what would be the equivalent to high school to college/university, today's the day where in principle they actually sort of will get all their results and everything else will be sorted through. So we did a special on this last week. You can obviously contact the University of Lincoln. You can contact any university for that point of view. You can contact UCAS. Go to the website and sort things through. But the key thing, as we always say, is whatever the results, congratulations and don't panic. There's always opportunities. There we are. That's my little bit for the day. We'll be featuring not only Good Soul Phil, but also Tessa Snart will be joining us shortly. We'll also be talking to Richard Fitzwilliams, who actually, his movies this week, interesting choices. Once again, he's completely ignored Luc Besson's views on the whole world of Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, and has decided to go for Atomic Blonde and Final Portrait. But Phil, your first task today, before we get into the weather in any way, shape or form, is to have a special dedication for the delightful Katie Grimmerson in Birmingham. We couldn't feature any Oasis yesterday because, well, you know, it was all sorted through there. But would you like to dedicate Wonderwall by, of course, the Manchester band with the Gallagher brothers to Katie Grimmerson? Phil, please take it away.
Oh, one of the great all-time songs. To one, dedicated to one of the great, the peerless, the iconic Midweek Drivettes, Katie Grimmerson in Birmingham. A genuine international treasure. Enjoy, Liam and the boys.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. About you now. And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us there are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say. you not to do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads that lead you there were winding, and all the lights that light the way are blinding.
Can rejoice with the legendary Tessa Snart as regular co-presenters on the Midweek Drive.
Yes, that might give you a little clue, Phil, in terms of the fact that Shirley MacKenzie's in the studio.
Whoa. Hi.
Hello.
And somebody else who has mentioned that jingle is also online at present. Do you know who that might be?
Was it Tessa Snart who was just introduced?
Oh, this guy's sharp.
He is. He's on the case there. He does not mess around in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, can we talk about Wonderwall just for a minute? Because, boy, it's been a long time. It's been probably 20 years since I've heard that song, because I don't hang out at karaoke bars. But what a crackerjack tune, and I've always loved that it was such a beautiful tribute, not only to the Beatles, but George Harrison specifically. You know, his first album in 1968, Wonderwall Music, was a big influence on Liam and the boys. And, of course, 1968, the year I was born, so you can't go wrong with Wonderwall.
Well, you mentioned
now,
something.
Please continue with your show, Alex.
No, but Phil, it's our show. It's the same way as it's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. It's our Midweek Drive Morning Edition. The great news is I can reveal now that when Tessa Snart returns to Midweek Drive presentational studio duties, probably on the 30th of August.
Woohoo!
Exactly. When also the Wednesday Midweek Drive returns to a live connectivity from 5 p.m. through to 7 p.m. British time. I mean, we're still sort of working our way through a variety of other bits and pieces. Your warm-up person, in other words, the person who schedules to join us telephonically just ahead of the regular half-six Phil-Linus connections, is none other than George Harrison's sister, Louise Harrison. Talking about her book, my kid brother's band. Spoke to her, a long chat with her yesterday. So you see, it's all things must pass, Phil.
I kind of helped set that up.
You did, exactly. That's why I wanted to mention it. Yourself and R.W. Saunders.
I've never had a chance to speak to her yet because you got to call at a specific time. She only uses landlines.
Yes, yes.
But
she's old school like that. Yeah.
She's old school. I don't think she knows there's different schools, honestly. But she sounds She sounds like just a wonderful, wonderful woman. Was it great talking to her, Alex?
Yes, and that's even before we started the show. The book, I have to say, my kid brother's band is outstanding. I'm going to pass it. Hopefully, Shaley, to actually have a read through before we actually work through that.
Yeah.
But it kind of puts a whole new perspective, obviously, on the Beatles history and some really good stuff there.
That sounds really interesting. I'm game for that.
So I would say, all being well, barring major disasters such as missiles over Guam or various other sort of situations on the world geopolitical stage, etc., and let's face it, we need those Harrison hugs. Louise Harrison will be joining us on Wednesday, the 30th of August. There we are. Meanwhile, Tessa...
It makes me wish that I did a weekly podcast with someone who actually enjoyed music, or at least the noise that it makes.
Now,
but as Dean Haglund has gone on record saying, he doesn't particularly like music. So... I have to come to the midweek drive to get that itch scratched.
Well, clearly, and it has to be said, this week's Chilpack Hollywood Hour does actually feature Southern Nights with Glenn Campbell after probably the rudest joke I've ever heard Dean Haglund ever sort of reveal. Lord. Instantly, it's case we can't have that on British broadcast radio. Exactly.
No.
I took him to task. I took him to task for that, did I not? And I love that his immediate defense was to throw a member of the clergy under the bus, saying, "I know a minister in Canada who tells that joke."
There are certain sort of aspects which are just not kosher with the whole sort of thing. The reality of family life is not represented in popular culture. After 9 o'clock today, we'll be talking to the curator of public life at the British Library. In fact, lead curator of contemporary politics and public life at the British Library, freelance food consultant and writer, that's Dr. Polly Russell. And apparently, a fifth of people living in Britain feel that now families do not conform to traditional stereotypes and are underrepresented in popular culture. Over a third of consumers feel television shows are the main culprit for misrepresenting modern family life, closely followed by advertising.
Mm.
Yeah, so it can be shock horror. Popular culture doesn't necessarily represent
true life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Phil, I know you might have just picked yourself off the floor from that one, and Fuzz Aldrin probably just completely astounded by that. But does that resonate in the States? I mean, surely everything that you see on TV in the United States, from Bonanza back in the day, through to Friends back in the day, through to Family Guy back in the day, all represents what's happening in American culture.
It's refreshing to hear that the same thing goes on there that happens here. I mean... Here, in fairness, there is a lot more geographical terrain to cover, but indeed, yes, many large swaths of America feel unrepresented in movies and especially in television. So it's refreshing to see that is a similarity for storytellers elsewhere. Though, again, this is not a new thing, right? I mean, when Michael Caine first came to prominence, didn't he tell the story about how every acting teacher told him to lose his accent because he would never get a job?
Yeah.
Because he didn't sound like someone from central London, right? And wasn't that what an actor had to do to be able to be on television or in the movies at that time.
And why Morris Micklewhite should ever actually worry about having to change his name at all, I really don't know. But, you know, there we are. It's like John Wayne changing his name from Marion. That's amazing.
You know what? I was going to actually joke. Morris Micklewhite, wasn't that John Wayne?
We're
thinking along the same lines. Yeah,
exactly. Right. It just shows that sort of connectivity is there. Tessa, this evening, people across the globe have a chance to, if they're tuned into their radio sets on Siren 107.3 FM or sirenonline.co.uk, listen to Volume 11 of Sound and Country Vision. What delights does that programme contain?
Well, hopefully a lot of good music once again. And guests such as Chloe Rhodes, who is Lincolnshire's very own country gal, although her music isn't technically country music, but that's our sort of country or not segment. So, and a lot more guests. So
exactly, it's opening up. And what, before we actually go up to weather forecasting times and such like material, what delightful country themed tune or artist would you like to suggest that Phil should cast his ear to, as he also psychs himself up for the weather forecast and other sort of details?
Oh, we've already spoken about him on the show this morning. I'd like to suggest Glen Campbell.
Oh.
Just as we, obviously, we lost him just very recently.
Well, remember, he's still there as long as we continue to remember him. That's the important thing. any particular, I mean, from the selection we've got up here,
we've got
Southern Nights, which actually has a launch Chilpack Hollywood Hour. We've got True Grit, a personal favourite of Camo, of course, nodding in the direction of Camo from Nashville. Try a Little Kindness. Do you like that? It's very positive, I think, very apt in geopolitical situation. All I Have to Do Is Dream, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Galveston. Are you still sitting for Try a Little Kindness, or is there something else there that we sort of thought, where are you going to, as our country expert, send the listener, Tessa?
I think we should go with Galveston, just because it's one of the top, I think.
You do. Phil, you've been very quiet. I mean, was there any sort of thing which you would say, I think she's completely wrong, we should have actually had Wichita Lineman?
You know, I've been spending all night watching candlelit vigils in response to the racial violence here in America, candlelit vigils that could not be promoted on social media for fear that they would attract more hatred and violence. So I would side for Try a Little Kindness. I think it might be what we need at this part of the world. But I yield to Tessa. She's the expert.
Shaylee, you have the casting vote then.
Oh, there's so much pressure. I feel like we should go for kindness as well. Tessa. Sorry.
No, I completely agree. No, I actually do.
Your brother standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed. And if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you're going the wrong way. You've got to try a little kindness. Yes, show a little kindness. Just shine your light for everyone to see. Narrow-minded streets. Don't walk around the down and out. Lend a helping hand instead of doubt. And the kindness that you show every day will help someone along their way. You've got to try a little kindness. Yes, show a little kindness. Yes, shine your light for everyone to see. And if you try a little kindness, then you'll overlook the blindness. Narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded.
And there we go. Has that actually got you tapping your scenarios in Los Angeles, Phil?
There's something very healing about the way Glen Campbell sang a song. In fact, just this last week, Lily Holloman had succumbed to a bit of a migraine, or a migraine, as you might pronounce it, and put on some Glen Campbell, put on about 20 of his tunes, and by the end of it, she was ready to face the world.
And Tessa, do you feel as though the universe guided us to the right choice?
Oh, definitely. Now, I forgot how good that one was. And it's funny you should say that. My mum was actually listening to his greatest hit album last night. So I agree
it's
that
very
it's
uplifting, isn't it?
And yeah. If it's good enough for Leanie Jane, then the world is a happy place. In 23 days, 8 minutes and 11 seconds, 10, 9, 8, it'll be the first ever RAF Scampton air show. It looks at this stage as though, given that Ben Lewis can't make it, unbelievable, but Ben has hopefully set up a couple of things, so all being well, Shaylee might well be around. Will he be coming, Tessa, to the Scampton air show?
Oh, I'm not sure.
No, I know. It's
I might...
It's a week after the excitement that will be the Burley Horse Trials, so who knows what could be happening. But I might
just be able to come to that then. Yeah. I was thinking in my head all dates and everything, but yeah. I will be left TK Maxx then, and I won't be back.
Exactly.
In
yeah. Other stores are available. It's just a case of Tessa always likes to give a little brand opportunity there for a maximum TK show.
I didn't realise.
Exactly. You know, it's just rolled out there. Last week, of course, we were talking with Ellie Sample and Gabriella Peralta, who indeed is in at this very moment doing duty for the Gibraltar Chronicle about how people are coping with their A-level results in Gibraltar. Tessa, share with us your tale, because I'm sure, Phil, whether you got the significance and the media hype that sort of works during this particular day in August when the A-level results are released, particularly when, as occurred this year, the exams are supposed to be a lot tougher around the whole base. So Tessa,
yeah.
Talk us through your own sort of experience. I think you did a sensible thing and took a bit of time out before deciding to go to university in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I did my A-levels, and I feel it was a very intense time. I think it is a lot of pressure, and I know some of my friends, their younger sisters, they're going through that now. And even though they've got into certain universities with an unconditional, and they're still stressing about getting that good grade. But yes, I remember going in, I was so, so nervous. But I was lucky because I actually had one of my teachers come over to me, and she opened the envelope with me, which was really nice, just really supportive. And yeah, they were okay grades. I was happy with them. I think you can always do better, or I could have done, but they weren't awful grades. But I just think it's a really stressful time.
And
for everyone.
In years to come, Tessa, of course, you can tell your grandchildren what an envelope actually is, you know, because why would you actually open an envelope, a physical envelope, to actually open the results?
wait a second. Tessa has grandchildren?
In the future, she does.
Exactly. Phil, we are jumping across the time zones here. Please. You know.
She really did take some time.
Exactly.
I'm older than you think.
Well,
you
know?
Looks to be deceiving.
There you go. It just shows that in the future, they managed to work out the whole nip and tuck scenario. It's sort of true. You simply download your consciousness into another body.
I do.
Well,
I do.
It's amazing what work they can do.
Yeah.
Shaylee.
I do have to agree with you on the A-level thing. It is so much pressure. And especially, I've got a young girl at work. Shout out to Missy.
Hello, Missy.
She is currently going through that, and she's receiving her results today at 8:30. And she's very, very clever, very, very clever. And
34 minutes, Missy.
Yeah. She's absolutely nervy about her results.
Aww.
And I feel sorry for her because now that I have a degree, you don't think about your A-levels, you don't think about your GCSEs or anything. But at the time, it was the worst thing ever, waiting for your results after your exam period had finished. So, yeah, it is a very nervy thing to do.
Phil, is the pressure on in the States? Sorry, Tessa, we'll come to you in a second. Phil, is the pressure on in the States in that sort of similar sort of way?
Are you asking whether I remember having pressure 30 years ago when I was in college?
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you know that all the drinking I did in my 20s was to remove the memory of that? So I'm the wrong person to ask.
It's
a hazy blur.
Flashbacks, etc. Tessa, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, it seems like the end of the world, but as we know, once you move on from GCSEs, there's always other options to help you and to move forward, so... Yeah.
Exactly.
Good luck to everyone today.
And as I said, the key thing is don't panic. There are always opportunities. Everything else will work out splendidly, and so it goes.
Definitely, yeah.
So, as we said, Final Portrait and Atomic Blonde, as well as some thoughts on the Edinburgh Festival, will be what Richard Fitzwilliams will be talking about it. Now, Phil, are you still able to stay with us? I know we've got the weather after the news, which is in a matter of moments. We have the weather for Lincoln from both Glinton and from Los Angeles, which is quite interesting. See how we can
probably should get going after the weather, because I do have to tend to, we've got a bit of a sinus infection going on with our cat, so I have to use an eyedropper to administer to her. But I want to give you a serious answer, though, about college stress here. I think in America, and maybe this is different than in the UK, I think a lot of the stress here is about the cost of the education itself, the massive loan debt that students are taking on these days, which is totally different than when I went to school. And they're aware that even if they get into what is called a white-collar job, it's going to be decades before they're ever to pay off their student loan. And I think that's a big source of stress. And that's if they successfully make it into what are often obviously competitive workplaces. So there's a serious answer for you.
Indeed, sir. And as we like to say at the University of Lincoln, no matter where you're from in the world, this is your home. Welcome home to the University of Lincoln. Very important. So hopefully that'll still be there when you come back next year, Phil, to actually say, oh, I'm back home now. I'm back at the University of Lincoln. So the home is where the heart
is. I'm coming and I'm not leaving. I'm going to become artist in residence whether there's an opening for that or not.
Yay. Positive stuff. This is critical for that sort of point.
Don't take no for an answer.
The best way forward. And how's the Ian Lennox Brothers book, now that that's successfully crossed the Atlantic and has arrived, as you said in the little photographic image that you sent me, the eagle has landed. Have you made any headway at all? Is it a case of, I don't understand this northern talk? What's he talking about?
Oh, no. No, in fact, I've had to put it down because I am determined not to do what I used to do in my ill, misbegotten youth of starting books and not finishing them. So I have put it down so that I can finish the book that I have been reading. But it was difficult because as soon as I got it, I was standing in line at the post office for something else, and I read the first chapter and love it. So I can't wait to read it.
Well, we can hardly wait for the weather forecast coming up after the news from the Sky News Centre, after a little blast of the flying lizards.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. But your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Siren FM.
And first up, the weather for Lincoln from Glinton.
There will be highs of 23 centigrade and lows of 15 centigrade, and looking cloudy with outbreaks of rain, with sunny spells and scattered showers into the afternoon. And that is your morning weather.
Glinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
But that's just part of the weather scenario, isn't it, Shaley? Because it's all very well getting the Glinton view on our weather in Lincoln. We need to find out what is the Leonis Los Angeles view on the weather for the Lincoln area from LA.
Well, I think right now it's probably 16 degrees centigrade there. A brisk for us, you know, for this thin Los Angeles skin, a brisk 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And it sure does look rainy out there, light rain showers. But you're going to get a drizzle. That's my guarantee for you today. Light winds, all in all, perfect sweater weather, I think. Here in Los Angeles, if anybody's asking, we're looking at a high of 80 degrees, a low of 64 during the night. 10% chance of rain, they say, though, without a cloud in the sky, I think that's hopeful. 10%. It's probably just a stray sprinkler that's gone in an odd direction if they think we got a 10% chance.
Shaylee, would you like to ask Phil those last two questions before Phil asks Tessa those last two questions?
There is. Phil, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have. Thanks for having me.
Oh, excellent. Thank you for being here. Can we rely on you next week or in the future?
I don't know exactly what it is you would rely on me for, but you may feel free because I'll certainly be here.
Perfect.
And again, a little tease ahead to next Wednesday. We'll hopefully hear Phil's views on Lego movies that have been put together by young up-and-coming undergraduates from the University of Teesside.
Nice. Yeah, look forward to it.
Plus, say next Wednesday, you mean pre-recorded, right? You don't mean... Because it's Wednesday for me, right?
I know, Phil. Exactly. It's just if some people might actually hear it if we release on a podcast. It's the one which will have episode 3 of Penny Evans' Marauder. We may not get through the entire 20-odd episodes actually there, but you know we're up to episode 3 now, and I did promise her that we'd actually at least get the first 3 episodes aired. So you know, episode 2 went out this week. Episode 3 will be going out next week. So Phil, last two questions for Tessa, please.
Can I quickly just say I was going to ask Phil quickly. You posted something on Instagram the other day, and it was really interesting. You was having a lady, a guest, come to the LA Breakfast Club, and she was talking about taking in animals. And, that was so interesting. How did that go?
Oh, it was great fun, yeah. So a woman from the Wildlife Way Station came. They've rescued thousands of exotic animals, often... Scarily enough, this is they have to rescue them when people have illegally thought that wouldn't it be fun to have exotic animals as pets? And oh, look, everyone in the neighborhood loves having this baby Bengal tiger around. And then the baby Bengal tiger stops being a cub and starts looking at the neighbor children like dinner. And what do we do with the tiger now? So they have provided this home in a natural environment, a natural setting. They do amazing work. It's entirely donation-based, nonprofit, of course, but not funded in any way by the state or the government. So a very worthwhile cause. And most importantly, oh my goodness, the pictures, the PowerPoint presentation was so cute. When I go, I've decided I'm going to go by giving a giant hug to a tiger. That's how I want to go. I would go quickly, but I would know what it felt like to cuddle with a tiger. That's what I've decided.
And that's the reason Ron Ely's Tarzan program was so popular in the 1960s. And don't let me get started on Daktari with Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion. Greats of the TV world, and so representative of British and American family life. Anyway, we have asked Phil those last two questions, so Phil needs to put the final two interrogatives to Tessa.
Right, and then she asks those two questions to two friends and so on.
It's like a Harrison hug.
It goes on and on
As Louise actually said, she always feels that she's passing on the Harrison hug, because when she sends out a Harrison hug to the world, it's kind of her being hugged by her kid brother, so there's like a Harrison hug of warmth that's going through the whole system, which is wonderful. And it's a way of actually finding out what Richard Fitzwilliams will have to say about Charlize Theron and James McAvoy in Atomic Blonde back in the day. Off you go, please, Phil.
Tessa, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
I have, as I always do, and it was lovely chatting to you and Shaylee and Alex.
I like how you're last, Alex.
Well, in case you're wondering, it's all right. I mean, Tessa did a full social media post on the a year of Sound and Country Visions. He thanks everybody there except her producer. No mention of me whatsoever. Diddly squat. It's okay. You know, I just let it go. It's perfectly okay. You know, it's all fine.
That much is obvious.
Still,
being overlooked for the thank yous, always make sure that you will be remembered. Because, let's face it, in, like, Oscar acceptance speeches, it's always the person who's omitted that gets all the headlines.
Oh, well, yeah, it doesn't make me feel any better at all. It's okay. In case you're wondering, Hannah is in the New Forest. We don't know where, but that's where she is, somewhere in the New Forest. Yeah, strange but true. The final question, Phil, is...
Tessa, can we look forward to you joining us again next week?
I hope so.
Yay! Happy trails, Phil. Have a great Thursday. It's coming up to 9 minutes past midnight in Los Angeles, 9 minutes past eight in the UK. It's almost as though you decide to set up a movie simply to have a soundtrack to the 1980s, from Reflex and the Politics of Dancing, through to Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, through to New Order and Blue Monday. Perhaps if you're a South African actress who wants to actually do some action-adventure stuff and actually come out with a classic line such as, "Wear your seatbelt," you have to see the movie to appreciate the line of that. Maybe you'll sort of say, well, that's right, because not one, not two, but if you include Charlize Theron, three South African people. We got Shaylee McKenzie from South Africa.
Hi.
We got Richard Fitzwilliams, originally from South Africa.
Hey. Hello.
Are we all Atomic Blondes? Or is it just a case of that's where you're going to go with respect to this 2017 opus for James McAvoy, who, funny enough, I saw once again in Split recently. I kind of reviewed.
Oh, great film. Yeah, exactly. Really good film. And the one where he's different personalities.
Different characters.
Hedwig
different,
was my favourite.
And I Hedwig with a lisp. And he's also channeled some of that with respect to his somewhat drug-addled craze connector in Atomic Blonde. But enough of such stuff, bearing in mind it's directed by David Leitch, who's also doing Deadpool 2. As well as being a stunt double for a whole variety of things. What do you think Richard's going to say about Atomic Blonde, given that once again he's cast Luc Besson into the wilderness with Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets?
I think it could go either way, really.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I really am.
He's either going to love it or he's going to hate it.
Well, this is the classic line. So, Richard, the floor is now yours.
The floor is mine, and I will take advantage of it. Charlize Theron, indeed, the South African past, very relevant, and also we all remember her Eileen Wuornos' creation in Monster, which won her an Oscar. I mean, she, of course, is a superstar, and there's no question that she acts, she produces. It is indeed directed by David Leitch, as you say, and, well, she dominates here. It's quite an interesting story, because it's set in 1989, just whilst the Berlin Wall is about to collapse. The agent James Gascoigne is shot and killed by Yuri Bakhtin of the KGB, and Bakhtin therefore has a list which has every active field agent in the Soviet Union. And I fear this may prolong the Cold War for 40 years, so MI6 worry. Unusual and indeed not very convincing tale, because of course, as we know, the Cold War was about to end with the various states of the Soviet Union seeing and finding that there's a different future. But we begin, and it's quite clever this way this movie tells the story in flashback, because we know that Lorraine Broughton, played by Charlize Theron, she has survived. She's in fact being interrogated, so we know she's looking back as what she's experienced by MI6 executive Eric Gray, played by the ever-reliable Toby Jones, and the CIA agent played Hemet Kurzfeld, played by the ever-reliable, both of these actors are super, John Goodman, of course. So we see Lorraine set to Berlin to join, and you mentioned her rather unorthodox contact in East Berlin, David Percival, played by James McAvoy, and we know there's a double agent around, and also there's a French agent, Delphine, played by the luscious Sophia Boutella, with whom Lorraine has a passionate affair. And then we discover the various pieces of this plot as they're put together, because there is the character played by the, again, ever-reliable, good castress, Eddie Marsan, Spyglass. Now, not only is the where the list is a huge question mark for much of this film, but we know also that Spyglass has memorized it. So can he be smuggled across the wall, and if so, in what circumstances?
Only if he wears his seatbelt, Richard. Only if he wears his seatbelt.
And nothing to do with umbrellas. We won't mention them. No, I have to say that it's a very slick and glossy movie, this, and it's that carries it. Whereas when you think back, you see these extraordinary sequences of physical violence which involve Lorraine and practically everyone she comes into contact with. In fact, they get dispatched with such alacrity that in the first half of the film, I don't think most of them have a chance of firing their weapons.
It's the high-heeled shoe, Richard, that did it for me, Boo. The high-heeled shoe, that's always been very dangerous.
And the scene on the stairs, which was rehearsed and rehearsed and apparently involved all sorts of extraordinary activity. I mean, I'm not interested in how it's done, but certainly the way it was done. It's curious. We had Wonder Woman. I'm all for female agents who are, as it were, almost superhuman. Wonder Woman took us back, firstly, to a mythological past, and secondly, to the First World War. Here we go back. It's therefore a period movie, and I think that adds interest, because this film, some have called it rather stylish, others have called it empty, and they've said it's wasted Charlize Theron. She's certainly, I would say, almost omnipresent in it. It held me in a curious sort of grip whereby I was enjoying it, though not always feeling that what I was being shown made a great deal of sense, but nonetheless, it has a certain pace. It will be interesting to see how well it does, because there is so much violence, blood, literally all over the screen in a couple of scenes. I mean, this is a movie where you really got a formidable opponent who, if you're the KGB or you're East German police, you best beware and keep well clear. The violent scenes, yes, I mean, I found it rather enjoyable on the whole, and I have to say that Charlize Theron doesn't do too badly. I wouldn't mind if Atomic Bond returned, but I do think it's a good idea to place the movie, this for me, perhaps it's just the way my pond of history. You place it in a past era, even if it's recent. As opposed to the future.
Now, of course, Daniel Craig has signed up for another James Bond. Clearly, there needs to be another sequel to Atomic Blonde, but let's not go there at this particular stage.
Well, I have to say, yes, James, I mean, this was actually reported in the New York Times in July, and he's confirmed it, but I think he's been teasing us for some months on it.
Exactly. All other summer blockbusters should just surrender now, is the line on the trailer for Atomic Blonde. Shaylee, I believe you might have to leave us now. Is this the case?
I do indeed. I do apologise. So, I'd love to stay and chat about films. Also, Atomic Blonde sounds very similar to Angelina Jolie in Salt, which I thoroughly enjoyed, Richard, so I think I will be going to go see this one.
Yes, it's certainly pacey, and it's certainly, it's got action scenes, which are a bit tedious because there's so many of them, and they are quite similar, but I would agree that it packs a punch. You could certainly not deny that. And it's a very good cast. You put James McAvoy, Toby Jones, James Goodman and Eddie Marsan together with Charlize Theron, you're not doing too badly.
In 1964, American art critic James Lord gets uncomfortably close to artist Alberto Giacometti when the master paints his portrait. We'll find out about Final Portrait as we say farewell to Shaylee McKenzie. So it's not that she's leaving forever. She'll be back in about 7 days. That's the important thing. Enjoy that sequence there. Again, be intrigued to find out what Richard has got to say about Armie Hammer, of course. Who's not to forget, who could possibly forget his role as Ilya Kuryakin in that precursor to Atomic Blonde, The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
I was going to say The Man from U.N.C.L.E.,
exactly,
yeah.
Classic.
The tall,
I seem
the
to
tall,
remember that
one.
Film for some reason.
Exactly.
I wonder why it is.
Yeah, well, it's, you know,
no, I didn't. I was a bland and rather dull movie, whereas this is anything but bland or dull. In fact, what you've got here is a fascinating insight into the creative process, and also it's been very interesting to see Alberto Giacometti, the famous Swiss painter and sculptor. There's an exhibition that honors his work at Tate Modern, and whereas I have to say that I am not over fond of his sculptures, I do find his portraits particularly penetrating, and that is what, of course, this movie is about. As you say, in the early 60s, James Lord is told, well, I'm going to get to take an afternoon by Giacometti, who wants him to pose. Well, a few days, in fact, it was clear from reading the various notices in the show that Giacometti was rarely, if ever, satisfied. And indeed, 18 days later, this is still going on. What it does is give us an example to ask what the purpose of a portrait is. It's to capture the character of the sitter and show a relationship between the artist and the sitter. To what extent has the artist got to be satisfied that it is what he wants to produce before it ends? Because with Giacometti, things just don't end. In fact, if you think something is going to end, you might find the master decides that it ought to start again from the beginning because he could do even better. I mean, what this movie shows is firstly how alive portraiture can be and how fascinating. And I never thought there'd be quite so much attention as to what we saw on the canvas and how this was going to develop and what he was going to do with it. And indeed, would James Lord be allowed to have a peep at it? And indeed, would he be able to influence this cantankerous, elderly, but nonetheless, it's a wonderful studio. It's absolutely glorious artist garage. I mean, there's his wife, very good performance by Sylvie Testud as the long-suffering Annette, who takes a lover because, well, I mean, Giacometti is so infuriating. And in any case, he's got his mistress, the prostitute Caroline, played by Clemence Poesy. It's a wonderful insight into how an artist lives, how he loves his bohemian activities in the evenings, most of all, and above all, in that studio. It's Stanley Tucci directs this movie, and you miss him on the screen because I always greatly admire his performances. But what fascinated me was the way you're involved in the way a portrait is, so to speak, the creative process which produces it, and yet how unsatisfactory that can be and how infuriating an artist can be. It may sound cliched, but if you see this movie, there's Jeffrey Rush's performance is absolutely marvellous. I liked Armie Hammer. I liked the whole cast.
Does Geoffrey Rush do what Geoffrey Rush normally does and actually engage totally with the essence of the artist?
That is what I felt he did, as he did, as you remember, with, playing Health Got in Shine, or indeed the Marquis de Sade. I mean, the Rush, and also a role I thought he was exceptionally good in, Lionel Logue in The King's Speech, as the speech therapist who helps George VI through so many tough times with his terrible stammer, with the war looming. I mean, this is a remarkable actor, and here he's let loose, but only 60% rating, I see, in Rotten Tomatoes, because there are those who believe that artists portrayed on screen can be somewhat infuriating characters and are much of a muchness, in the opinion, no doubt, of reviewers who have not appreciated the fact that this movie has depth, it has an excellent script, and whereas it may have certain showy scenes where he burns some of his work or indeed flings money at his long-suffering wife, the facts are you get very, very involved in, for me, a riveting introduction to how Giacometti approached painting and approached portraits. It's very interesting to go to the to Tate Modern and see some of them.
We can't all have the classical way in which Charlton Heston portrayed Michelangelo, of course.
That had Rex Harrison as Julius II.
Exactly.
There was this hilarious talk. They hated each other, and they were trying to out-act each other. And apparently, Harrison arrived on set one day and found Michelangelo, who was actually dwarfish, had grown even taller because Heston had put special pads in his shoes. It was very colourful. I do have to say that I think the movie, directed by Carol Reed, he was not in his form, which meant Third Man and Oliver, which are such classics. I mean, everyone agrees about that. But The Agony and the Ecstasy had these incredible sets, and whereas it certainly was or could have done with some tightening up in parts, I did enjoy the duels between Michelangelo and the Pope. And people unkindly criticized it because every time Pope Julius came to see the work, he kept shouting out to Michelangelo, who was, of course, considerably above the floor when he was painting the ceiling, "When will you make an end of it?" "When," says the painter, "when I have finished." This is, in fact, what they actually said, even if it sounds banal.
Richard, we're coming round very, very quickly to 26 minutes past 8 o'clock. Now, I still like to get some features in about the joys of the Edinburgh Festival. And I also am beginning to channel what I think is going to be a guaranteed recommendation for you next week. And I'll let you know what that is. If you'd be kind enough to stay with us after we've followed the coverage of Atomic Blonde and Final Portrait with a little musical break, courtesy of the Lotus Eaters.
Absolutely.
The call for saving.